On the Empire Podcast this week, Southpaw star Jake Gyllenhaal drops by to show us some nifty footwork and the odd jab, while there's usual cavalcade of movie news and nonsense on the movie podcast that won't be mentioning Raheem Sterling's name in the intro again, that's for damn sure. Unless, of course, we do a piece about greatest traitors or whatever. Ha 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 ha, I'm okay, I'm over it. Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt, welcome to the Empire Podcast in association with Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code EMPIRE. How on earth are you going to remember that? I have no idea, but there you go. Joining me this week are two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up is our art house guru, who's just returned from Comic-Con, where he was and I wasn't, and that's just the way it is, where he cosplayed as the battleship Potemkin itself. It's Phil Desemlian. How are you?
Good, thank you very much.
Last but almost certainly least is our online editor-in-chief, a West Wing fan. Okay, there's the setup. A West Wing fan so fervent that he refuses to clean his house with pledge for him. Here's a punchline. It's Mr. Sheen all the way. Because the star of the West Wing is Martin Sheen, and there's a famous cleaning product called Mr. Sheen, and this is a joke that amusingly confuses the two.
That's very good.
And it's James Dyer.
I have a related question for you.
Okay.
Who's Raheem Sterling?
Raheem Sterling is... I don't want to talk about it. Here's this week's question, which is held over from previous podcasts. We never got around to asking it. Someone sent it in a while ago, and me being me, I've forgotten who sent it in, but it has stuck in our heads. Why don't you talk about the greatest movie hotel rooms? What are the hotel rooms and movies that stick out in your mind? And not necessarily places you'd like to stay, places in which eventful things have happened. Cool things have happened.
For a man who's had 5 weeks to prepare for this question, my answers are pretty skinny. Yep. But I would say that movie hotel rooms are usually a place where bad things happen rather than good things. It's rare that in a movie people check into a hotel and just have a nice time and then leave again. There's always some form of like gun battle or existential crisis, a la Lost in Translation, crazy weirdness, a la Barton Fink. Mm-hmm. Pretty Woman, I guess, has something close to a more happy type scenario, although that's pretty sleazy at times. So perhaps not.
All right.
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yes.
But there aren't a lot of hotel rooms in it, are there? It's mostly in the communal areas, this film.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of people actually staying, do you, really, in the Grand Budapest Hotel?
You don't. You see M. Gustav early on introducing himself to some of the older ladies, Tilda Swinton's character, for one, the very beginning of the film, but thereafter, it's mostly in the lobby.
Okay. I love the hotel suite that Clark Kent and Lois Lane stay in Superman 2, where that's actually where the fire, they have the fire into which Clark drops his glasses and retrieves his glasses without a scratch, thus leading crack investigative journalist Lois Lane to finally deduce that Clark Kent and Superman are one and the same. To be fair, she had been leaning that way throughout the course of the movie because, you know, she's got eyes! But otherwise, yeah, so that's great. And it has a vibrating bed, which is quite fun. There's a bit of business there, and there's a bit of business with there. There's only one bed, and Clark's a bit like, and she's like, no, you're going to get the couch, Kent. So that's one of my favourite hotel rooms. There are others, of course. Room 237.
Or 217.
Indeed.
If you're being a king purist.
Indeed. In the book, it's 217. In the film, it's 237. But bad things happen there.
They do.
Yeah.
I'd like to stay at the Continental from John Wick. That slightly surreal, weird hitmen's amnesty hotel.
Yes.
Which has Lance Reddick on the concierge. And indeed Lovejoy in the basement. But where he has that sort of dust up with Adrian Palicki in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Quite a nice room.
It's a nice room. It's a standard room. It's got a bed. It's got a TV. It's got a minibar. It's, you know, it's
got
it's
Lester
fine.
Freeman down the hallway.
It's got Lester Freeman, which is good. The rooms themselves don't seem that strange or out of the ordinary, but the hotel itself is pretty cool. I don't know what they gave it in TripAdvisor. But yeah.
Was he in the Savoy, wasn't he, in the Long Good Friday when he has the face off with the mafia, and he gives his whole famous mafia I shit him speech,
and then he walked out and, well, not to ruin the Long Good Friday, but yeah. Anyway, but yes,
there's some really really cool kind of hotel. for one thing, you never look through the spy hole mm-hmm. in a hotel room because mm-hmm. you will always be shot in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's call for room service because it'll always be an assassin.
Yep. Lethal Weapon 2.
Did someone ask for a club sandwich and death? No. Just wanted a club sandwich, but here you are. Bits where there's people coming into the hotel room and they have to escape through the window and then down the side of the building. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head. And in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, of course, that's a hotel room, isn't it? Where he kind of launches himself out and up the Burj Khalifa.
But yeah, hotel rooms in movies tend to be just like hotel rooms. They seem to be a bit nondescript. I mean, obviously you wouldn't want to stay in the Bates Motel, would you? You wouldn't want to stay there because, you know, you will get stabbed in the shower and turned into mulch.
The Overlook.
Equally. Yes. Yep.
Not a great honeymoon destination.
Indeed. Indeed.
And there is a whole kind of subgenre of motel, movie motels.
Yes, there are.
No Country for Old Men style or L.A. Confidential,
mm-hmm.
where you end up with crimes and misdemeanors taking place.
Yes, yeah. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't want... There's a lot of... I don't know if the question is more about hotel rooms, but hotels, yes. I mean, you wouldn't want to stay in the hotel that Barton Fink stays in Barton Fink, because obviously A, it ends up getting burned down, but B, it's also a bit of a rundown hotel. And there's a lot of rundown hotels as well in movies, lots of places that you wouldn't want to stay. But anything that's really opulent or really catches your eye.
Couples Retreat.
Yes.
Beautiful Bora Bora, one of those ones with the sort of glass floors and the aquamarine turquoise ocean beneath them, mm-hmm. and then just loads of annoying people around. So, you know, good and bad.
Good and bad.
I was going to say The Travel Lodge and Alan Partridge, but mm-hmm. it's not obviously a movie, but it is probably...
The
Linton Travel Tavern, sorry.
Yeah. It's an amazing place. An amazing place. Jimbo, do you have any more? Are we done? Are we done with this riff? We're done with this riff. There's loads more. There's always loads more, but, you know, we have to move on. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. But if you want to have your question sent in, and indeed, if you want to have that question credited to you, then please do write in if... you were the person who asked it. My apologies for forgetting your name. You should be writing these things down. I don't know what happened to it. But do send in your questions via Twitter at Empire Magazine is what we are on Twitter. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast. You can Facebook us, Empire Magazine. And hey, we're on email as well, podcast@empireonline.com. Okay, so it's time for some movie news now. I'm sure there's some things that have happened post-Comic-Con. But Phil, let's get your Comic-Con roundup.
Hi.
For the time being, because that was the biggest show in town, wasn't it, really?
It was if you're in San Diego.
Not this town, yeah. There is a big Comic-Con happening this weekend in London, though, isn't it? There's the London Film and Comic-Con, the cast of Back to the Future.
Indeed. And Michael J. Fox will be doing the panel. It's the only press I think he's doing for the anniversary tour, so that's quite exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. Very.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leia Thompson, they're all in. It's all very, very exciting. They're also reuniting a lot of the members of the cast of Aliens as well. So Sigourney Weaver's coming in, Michael Biehn. So it's a different kind of Comic-Con. It's not as focused on the new and the now as, say, they are in San Diego. But it seems to be one of those Comic-Cons that brings people back. And, you know, and this year they've scored a real coup with those two monumental casts. And I believe you can go get your picture taken with people and whatnot and look at a panel and all sorts of stuff. So it's all a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a lot of that kind of... I mean, I haven't been to Comic-Con before, as discussed, but there wasn't a lot of that kind of on-the-floor interaction that I understand sometimes you can get. Everything was kind of concertinaed into the Saturday, because as I think we discussed before, this was reasonably light in terms of big studio involvement. No Marvel, obviously. No Pixar. No Paramount. No Sony. So there were a few...
Well, there was Pixar.
Pixar was there, but in a kind of a reasonably small one, of, you know, promoting its short film.
I don't think they've ever been, actually. Think it back over the years. I don't think Pixar, they don't see it as a thing for them.
No. The kind of the big players in town all came out on the Friday night in the shape of Star Wars, obviously, and Saturday, which kicked off with a big DC panel. And I guess people were looking at it as a Star Wars versus Batman versus Superman type of shingle, if you're looking for the big sort of headline event. And if you are looking at that, I think Star Wars won it. It seems to me. I wasn't at that particular presentation, but it sounded like the audience was in raptures. They showed, obviously, JJ showed the sort of show, a really, I think, quite a smart show reel of behind the scenes footage and some new stuff, without giving too much away, but keeping people happy. I think he struck a nice balance with that. And then obviously when the panel finished, they just upped and everyone followed them Pied Piper style across from the convention center, across a little kind of peninsula, to listen to the soundtrack being scored by the San Diego Symphony Orchestra, I believe, and everyone got lightsabers. So yeah, that was an absolute triumph.
Oh, I'm very glad for you. Very
yeah,
happy.
Yeah, we're
very
not happy. Bitter, are we, Chris?
You guys look. Anyway, you guys look. Annoyed. Look like no. You mean it as well, mm. Which is what I love
yeah.
about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm currently stabbing a Phil voodoo doll, but has having no effect whatsoever, which is weird.
That's Count Orlok.
Oh yeah, sorry.
I know the similarities are abundant, but Saturday I was in attendance from the Warner Brothers. Just after the Warner Brothers, it went into there was some Lionsgate stuff, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Then Quentin Tarantino turned up and rot the house with The Hateful Eight, which was an interesting. It was almost a bit of a sort of cinematic history lecture, like a film studies 101. It was kind of fun. It was like, we were expecting a lot about The Hateful Eight, but it was really, he was talking about the 65mm and how it's going to be projected on 70mm in these roadshow releases. So he had to explain what a roadshow release was. And then it was almost like, you know, the first film was made in 1880 something, and the Lumiere brothers were like, well, how far can you take this? If they had done that, the crowd still would have gone absolutely ballistic. Just seeing him there, he seemed really sort of happy and in the zone.
And he brought some footage?
Hmm?
He brought some footage?
He dropped 7 minutes of footage. And introduced everyone bar Samuel L. Jackson of okay. The Eight. And the footage looks, I mean, it looks very Tarantino-y. You know, kind of gnarly dialogue, lots of witty kind of one-liners, lots of tension building. Didn't show any of the violence, but it gave a sense of the sort of the tension cranking up to this big climax. It reminded me a little bit of the scene in Inglourious in the Estaminet, where, you know, obviously all the beginning of Inglourious Basterds, those kind of really tense internal shots. And he did talk about how the 65mm, everyone sees it as a big landscape format for shooting with, but in this instance he thinks it brings immediacy and intimacy to the internal shots too. So he has a, I mean, it's going to be kind of outdoors indoors, and you've got a sense of the landscape. It looks beautiful, and you know, obviously snowy vistas, and then it kind of obviously everyone piles into this saloon, which I keep calling salon.
What can be I get a very different type of movie.
Different sort of movie. And some of the characters, especially Tim Roth, looks like he's shaping up to be the Christoph Waltz type, flamboyantly over the top, Terry Thomas type character, who's an Englishman in a big fur coat, really kind of hamming it up to his heart's content. But the cast looks good. Everyone seemed to be just happy to be working with Quentin Tarantino. That was the takeout from the panel. Kurt Russell and it was a big tribute from Bruce Dern. Sam Dern had nothing positive to say whatsoever.
Bruce L. Jackson,
all of the guys.
Yep. Kurt Goggins, Jason Lee, Jennifer Goggins. Russell, they were all there.
All the big guys were there. And that
was
fun.
16 by the time you're
there. Yeah, there was a lot of people involved. And then we had Legendary, saw some Warcraft footage.
And what did you see?
I don't know.
Men with swords, axes, orcs,
I don't
griffins.
Know. I need to wear those like lenses they have in Mission Impossible.
Did you
so
see
you could watch it through my eyes and tell me through an earpiece what the hell was going on.
Was it, did you see the Archmage Medivh?
Very possibly.
Okay, good.
So, but it looked good. Looked fine.
It looked interesting. I mean, you reserve judgment. I think it's something that they show. It crams a lot of CG stuff in the Orcish realm. What would you call the Orcish realm?
Draenor.
That sounds like a Mr. Sheen alternative.
Ooh.
You know, Draenor or Mr. Sheen. Good anyway, callback. Draenor.
Yes.
Is thank you. It's a very CG world, but strangely, Duncan Jones did talk about these huge physical sets they'd built, and he mentioned that they were a bit Cecil B. DeMille, a bit Cleopatra. You didn't really get a sense of that in the footage. It does look like a very Avatar-y, Pandora-y CG realm.
Because the film is essentially locked at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, well, this is the funny thing. I mean, it's finished. He says he's got, I think it's 8 to 10 CG shots to drop in, and then it's all done. And then it's not out for another 11 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a slightly muted reception, I thought, in Hall H, in a day when there was a lot of whooping and cheering. Maybe they were just saving their energy for the big Fox panel, which showcased, obviously, X-Men, Deadpool. Deadpool went down like a absolute, you know, carnival. People, I think Hall H, I speak like I've been there before, but it feels like Hall H has a sense of ownership of this film, of Deadpool, because, as Ryan Reynolds pointed out, they are the ones that have helped make it happen. Footage leaked from there, which I think weirdly helped the film get through.
Well, it didn't leak from there, but
Deadpool footage did leak, and I'm using inverted commas around it there. Nick Semlian is currently outside the booth, pressing what can only be described as his face up against the glass. That's always Great. Phil, can you control your brother? He's gone. He's gone. Did anyone else see that? Okay.
Jacob's ladder again.
Yeah. Footage did leak on the internet mysteriously. No one knows how it got out there. And then there was a huge, you know, oh, hey, people like this. We should make this into film. And now they're making it into film. And it sounds really fun. It sounds like it's going to be very, very different from any superhero film we've seen. It's going to be raucous and R-rated and over the top and breaking the fourth wall constantly. And sounds good. Sounds good. How did Batman, Superman and Suicide Squad and all that go down?
Well, I wasn't at the DC panel, but I think it went down, by all accounts. I mean, Ali was there for that one, but he said it went down, you know, pretty well. Again, it was slightly in the shadow of Star Wars from the night before. They just seemed to kind of, I don't know, just have a sense of taking the fans on a bit of a journey, okay, physically and otherwise.
Sure.
I'm not sure Warner Brothers have quite that kind of, I don't know, quite a delicate
touch. I don't
know,
Warner Brothers do that thing, don't they? And I know they did it again this year. Where they have the screens, they have the panoramic screens that go around the entire Hall H. If you've never been to Comic-Con, if you've never been to Hall H before, it's a fast 6,500-seater arena at the very, very end of the convention center in San Diego. And basically you sit there and there's massive screens and a stage and people come on, they talk about their stuff and they show footage and whatnot on the big screens. And it's a really weird experience because you're almost, you know, I want to get your take on it because, you know, you'd never been before, and geek properties are not your natural arena, fair to say, maybe. So what was it like for you? I mean, did you, because, you know, one thing I love about Comic-Con is going around, there's sheer variety of people and seeing everyone in costume, and just, it's one of the happiest places I've ever been to because, you know, you'll always get your small percentage of dickheads and whatnot, but by and large, everyone is really psyched and pumped to be there. And they're happy because this is where they belong. They fit in and everyone accepts them for who they are. Did you get a sense of that? It was
there was a guy near me who just every few minutes would just get up and just go, woohoo! And I'd be like, Ali, seriously, you're a professional journalist.
I have this image in my mind of you walking around Comic-Con like Marcus Brody in The Last Crusade.
Can anyone tell me how to get to the Suicide Squad panel?
Hello, where are the Darden brothers? I'm confused.
You'll never find him.
Three Colors Warcraft, what is this?
With any luck, he's got Orgrim Warhammer's death sword already.
Okay. I'll just create a little bit of gap, so if anyone wants to pour any more of my art house shit into me,
Get it out of the way. I was having a go at James there.
No, good. Yeah,
that
James.
With his Warcraft.
You're the newcomer to cinema. I would say that, yes, it is a very singular experience being in Hall H for about 12 hours, because once you leave, it's kind of difficult to get back in. So you are kind of in for the long haul, and you get to a point of where you've seen too much, and you get the stare. It's like Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Just stare. I've got the 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah.
Been in the shit too long. But it's like all of Comic-Con, it's incredibly infectious. There's people really, really, like you say, they're really psyched to be there. They're really enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Everybody's really cheerful. We walked the hall on Sunday morning before we left with our suitcases, and I must have run over four people, and they're like, dude, it's fine, I'm having a great time, as they limped away. I'm like, I mean, sorry to all those people, by the way. You just feel really, it's just nice to be around that level of enthusiasm. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter what your interests are in terms of cinema or in terms of, you know, what your preferences are. And I like superhero movies, but it's just very kind of, it's a nice place to be in terms of just the level of positivity. There's a lot of emotion as well, which is, I don't know, like, I mean, there's a lady who asked Joss Whedon a question when Joss Whedon came out and did his kind of, it felt almost like a group therapy session. He came out, I'm really not making a movie at the moment. I've got a comic book he wanted to talk about, but he just came out and wanted to talk and take questions and just talk about staff. The lady came out and asked Joss Whedon a question. She wanted to ask him a question. She said she never got to thank Gene Roddenberry for Uhura, but she did want to thank him for Zoe. And she had tears flooding down her face. She was very emotional about it. And it's like, wow, this stuff means so much to people. Mm. And you can understand why they spend so much money and it takes them a long time to get into the hall. The queue for Star Wars was, I mean, there was someone putting it on Instagram. It was insane. Mm. We went up to 24th floor of some hotel and you can see they're just snaking around Southern California, people trying to get in. People commit an awful lot of time and energy and emotion to this stuff, but it is overwhelmingly positive. There was nothing on the Saturday that I experienced that was negative. At the very worst, the energy slightly flatlines, and if people are a bit indifferent,
it does. So
they show it that way.
A thing I kind of like to mention, I mean, we mentioned earlier about the Deadpool footage leaking, and the thing about Comic-Con this year is, interestingly, almost all of the footage from the major panels has in one form or another leaked on the internet, which doesn't usually happen with Comic-Con. There is a kind of, I would say unspoken, but it is actually explicitly spoken. There is a covenant between the convention and the people in Hall H that this stuff is presented for them and their eyes alone. It's a special treat for people who've come to Comic-Con, and would they please turn off their phones and not film it? And I think this year is the first year, I mean, occasionally stuff does leak, but this year, consistently, almost every, maybe the same guy, almost every panel found its way onto the internet. Now,
I haven't seen, for example, I haven't seen any reports of the Apocalypse footage leaking.
Yeah, I saw it.
I think it did. Yeah. It did leak.
Ago, yeah. Literally, yeah. Almost everything.
That infuriates me, to be quite frank. But go on.
No, I agree with you. I think it's one of these things where I have some sympathy for the studios, but I do think they wring their hands a little bit much, because it is, to a certain extent, promotional material. I think I'm more sympathetic towards the convention itself, because it is, you know, the people who go to Comic-Con, there is a kind of a fraternity or a sorority or just a sort of kinship among geeks, that they have travelled, they've made this pilgrimage to Comic-Con to see something that no one else can see. And I think that experience is lessened if it's put on the internet, you know, an hour later.
Yeah, I mean, I got into this on Twitter with a whole bunch of people over the weekend, because and it started off with something different. Basically started off was the Suicide Squad, either the Suicide Squad or the Deadpool footage, was one of the two. Mm. And let's say leaked is the wrong word. Have it put on the internet by an asshat who went to Comic-Con, ignored roundly the requests by Comic-Con not to film. Every year we've gone, they go, please don't film what's going to be on the screens, because studios will start A, not coming at all, or B, they'll come but they won't bring the footage, and then where are we going to be? So please don't do that. And some people just roundly ignore it, and they go ha 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 ha, stick it to the man and put it on the internet. And you know, and that's okay if I find that abhorrent, but okay, that's done dusted. But outlets, major outlets, I won't name them, were then linking to these stories, going, oh, hey, we're meant to be a reputable outlet, a website, whatever, and here's where you can see some interestingly obtained footage, shall we say, because it's
a legal grey area.
Yeah, because it's not a finished film or whatnot. And that just angered me, the fact that, you know, journalists or people who call themselves journalists, and I'm using air quotes quite extensively here, would do that. That just angered me. And I got into a lot of people, and then some people were saying, well, hang on, this is ridiculous. You know, why shouldn't everyone be able to see this footage at the same time? And I was kind of saying, well, to be quite frank, maybe the people who have, as you say, made that pilgrimage to Comic-Con, maybe they should be given the stuff on an exclusive basis as a reward for being able to go. To which some people responded, well, what makes them special? That they can afford to go to Comic-Con? In a kind of way, yes. Because it's not like these people are rolling in cash. I mean, you know, a lot of them have saved up for months, sometimes years, to go to Comic-Con. And then when they get to Comic-Con, it's not a question of they just blithely walk into Hall H like we entitled, you know, morons.
Press people.
You know, we just blithely walk into Hall H. But most people don't. Most people queue out overnight in the open air, come rain or shine, for hours, sometimes days on end, to get into the stuff. So is it really too much to ask that they should be allowed to have that stuff on an exclusive basis?
It's funny.
Entitlement is just flabbergasting to me.
Anyway. On the one hand, I'm probably like the first in the queue to watch this pirated footage, just because I wasn't able to go to Comic-Con and I do want to see it. But so it does make me a massive hypocrite, obviously, to then say that they shouldn't do it. Mm. But I do feel for people, and I think, you know, JJ had a clear plan that for Star Wars they didn't show footage from the film, they showed behind the scenes footage, showed that nicely edited making of reel, and they put that online a few hours later, and they'd clearly decided they were going to do that beforehand.
That's a change in policy, definitely.
Yeah, and I felt a little bad for the people in Hall H, because that does take away some of the, you know, the exclusivity, the we were there, we saw this.
Yes, but at the same time, you know, and you can see the panels as well, but there's nothing that beats being in that room when Harrison Ford walks out, or nothing that beats that, you know, being in that room when a few years ago Tom Hiddleston appeared as Loki, in character as Loki.
And called us all mewling quims.
Absolutely. Or, you know, last year when the Avengers came out one at a time, and each successive scream seemed to get louder and almost, you know, the old cliche, threatened to lift the roof off the place. But there's nothing to beat being in that room. But I don't know, I just think that the people who slave and get over there and queue and line up and do everything, they should maybe be given a little bit more grace. But it's the now culture that I have some issues with. Anyway, we've talked enough Comic-Con, because there has been some other news that's happened in a week, hasn't there, boys? And please tell me there has been.
Has there?
There has. I'm sure there has.
Dan Aykroyd sent a tweet and then deleted a tweet. That was quite interesting.
Okay.
Did we see that? Dan Aykroyd tweeted that he was shooting a scene on the set of Ghostbusters with Kristen Wiig, was clearly enjoying himself, and then hastily deleted it when everyone picked up with the news. Hey, Dan Aykroyd to be in new Ghostbusters. So that was a lot of fun. But interesting that Ray Stans will be making an appearance in the film.
Now, are they saying he's going to be Ray Stans?
They haven't said that. I think we can assume, unless he's going to be sort of man in toll booth and it's just a bit of a, you know, wink and a nod and tip of the hat.
I've got a feeling they're going to go that way. He's not going to be Stans, because I think the idea is that this is a reboot and that these are the first Ghostbusters. That's my feeling. That's my understanding, anyway.
That feels right to me.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just start encumbering the film with other... exposition and next to why is he in it, and then it becomes complicated. But maybe he's been involved in this obviously from the get-go, so you know, I guess a cameo makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
there's been a couple of things that we kind of knew were happening but are now definitely happening, which is Tilda Swinton playing the Sorcerer Supreme in Doctor Strange.
Not literally playing the Sorcerer Supreme, because that is of course Doctor Strange, but the Ancient One in Doctor Strange.
Tilda Swinton playing the Sorcerer Supreme in Doctor Strange's nemesis. They didn't let me finish my sentence.
Wait a minute. Sorry, Phil, I jumped in there.
The Ancient One.
Good save.
I was just pausing. I'm working on my articulation.
But it's not Nemesis either.
No.
Absolutely right. I mean, your sentence.
Tilda Swinton is playing the Sorcerer Supreme, Doctor Strange's nemesis.
The Ancient One. That's an amazing sentence.
That's good.
Doctor Strange.
I can see Comic-Con's rubbed off
confirmed.
On you. And,
yeah. So that's happening.
That's
and
confirmed.
Idris Elba is confirmed for the new Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek Beyond. Exciting. I reckon he's going to be a Klingon. He'd make an awesome Klingon.
Everybody thinks he'll be a Klingon. Maybe he won't be.
Maybe he won't be.
Maybe he'll be a Borg.
Maybe he'll be a Borg. Yes,
I'm
indeed.
Fast running
Resistance
out of Star is futile.
Lufa. Be brilliant.
Yeah, so those things happening. And they're also making a live
Bill
action...
Bill Sykes has just walked in the room. Like,
got to pick a pocket or two. But first, I'm going to tell you about this Aladdin live action prequel.
Great.
Which I genuinely couldn't be less excited about.
That's the spirit.
Oh, dear. Cut to 2 years' time. Oh, where's the set? Where's the shooting? Oh. Bora Bora?
It's called Genies.
I've always loved Aladdin.
Aladdin in Bora Bora. Why would he be in the South Pacific?
I don't know. I was just trying to come up with something, you know, somewhere that's nice.
You've got three wishes, and you're going to waste one of them on being on the same set as Couples Retreat.
This is true.
Be there anymore, will they? So maybe that would work. It's called Genie, anyway. I apologise for being negative about it. It may be really good. I just think of Robin Williams. It makes me think of Robin Williams, and then I feel sad, and then I just feel negative. So I'm just going to put that to one side.
So they're going to call it Genie?
They're calling it Genie.
It's a live-action prequel.
Let me tell you what happens. The movie tells the story of Aladdin, a street urchin who finds a lamp, because he loves lamp, then unleashes a genie which grants him three wishes. A love interest and a sorcerer also figure in the proceedings. Call Tilda Swinton.
Could it be a Sorcerer Supreme? Perhaps the
That's become a minefield for me.
Wow.
Who knows? Nemesis is nemesis.
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 I don't know, I'm making this up.
No, Nemesis.
Yeah. So it's in the early stage of development, but there's a plan here that will have the project lead into an Aladdin live action movie. So it's a way off yet.
Welcome to Phil Reads Out a Press Release live on the air.
This is compelling.
Once more with feeling. That was great.
There hasn't been a lot of news. There was only one bit of news from Comic-Con, which, as far as I could tell, because there are occasionally big announcements like Batman versus Superman made at Comic-Con.
Yes.
Not this year though, no. Particularly. Although Quentin Tarantino did announce that Ennio Morricone will be writing his first original score for The Hateful Eight. He's not really ever used pure score before. And he and Ennio Morricone had a bit of a contretemps, I would say, over the Django music.
Weirdly enough, I found, I don't think I have it on my phone now, but I was looking at this yesterday, and there's an interview with Morricone from 2013 where he basically says, I will never work with Tarantino again, because we had a real Barney on Django Unchained. But Tarantino's give them the softly, softly approach, and off we go. So right, an entire score, which is going to be fun. I'm really, really excited about that film. And of course, this will be the first Tarantino film to have a score,
yeah.
A proper score.
Yeah.
Because he usually uses pop songs, and when he uses bits of score, they recycle from other films, traditionally, yeah. Anyway. So for him to go down this route is very exciting. Very exciting indeed. Well done. Well done, Quentin Tarantino. Well done, Ennio Morricone. Anything else? I'm just looking down the list here of stuff, and no. We're out of news. We're all done. Which means it is time for this week's guest. A few months ago, I think it was last year actually, Antoine Fuqua came at Le Pod to talk about The Equalizer. He was there to nominally talk about The Equalizer, but he couldn't stop talking about the movie he had just finished shooting, which was Southpaw, a boxing drama with Jake Gyllenhaal. And as he left, I don't know if you were here, Phil, or not. I think it might have been Ali. As he left, he took out his phone and he showed us a pic of Jake Gyllenhaal from the film. And he was just rippling and transformed, and I believe it was from the film. It wasn't just a selfie Jake had taken and sent to Antoine Fuqua. But he was immediately, he was like, "Oh, okay, this is different," because he'd gone straight from that, from Nightcrawler into that. And now, finally, Southpaw is here, in which Gyllenhaal plays Billy Hope, who's a boxing champion from the wrong side of the tracks, who has it all and then loses it all and then has to try and get it back again. He popped into the booth recently to talk to Ali, and I don't think he had a shirt off. Ali might have done, but I can't verify that for sure. Do enjoy the interview.
You're eating a sandwich with that cheese and ham there?
Yeah. Greg from Greg's. Yeah.
From Greg's. I love it.
Yeah.
Gotta love Greg's. You're on the Empire podcast for the second time. You're once before for End of Watch, which we're big fans of. I will try to resist asking.
You got good taste.
You're damn straight. I'm going to resist trying to talk about End of Watch and Nightcrawler because big fan here.
You should.
I should, and I probably will eventually. But okay. We're also going to talk about your new movie, which is called Southpaw. Do you mind if I get through the questions everyone asks and you're sick of answering?
Sure.
Southpaw, what is a Southpaw?
Well, a Southpaw is someone who is, there's orthodox stance fighting, which is most people with your left hand as a jabbing hand, you know, our jabbing arm, and your right hand, you know, obviously is behind the left hand, and the Southpaw is when the stance is different. But is the opposite, hence southpaw, meaning your paws are essentially the opposite way. And people have varying definitions for why it's called that, but I think that's probably the most logical. It's the opposite.
Sure. Yeah, like in skating, you skate goofy.
Yeah, but, you know, he is not a southpaw, this fighter. In fact, he is more, it's sort of the metaphor of the movie in a lot of ways. And also, there's a, well, you don't want to give too much away about the movie, but...
Sure. Yeah. This role was originally earmarked a long, 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 long time ago for Eminem.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel to step into his shoes?
You know, being an actor, I think generally you know, there's a lot of talk about roles. Sometimes people play other roles or gonna play a role than someone else does. And ultimately, my philosophy, particularly when people have asked me, "Oh, hey, I heard you were maybe gonna play this role," I always find that so odd because. Once it rolls and actors, it's theirs, you know. And I always say that from the opposite side. But what I will say is, you know, it's like loosely based on certain things that happened in his life at first, the first few drafts. And then once I came on, we changed a lot of things and sort of became my own thing. And then M saw the movie and really loved the movie. And so he wrote a couple songs for the movie. And then he also was executive producing the soundtrack for it. So, you know, it all ended up sort of falling into place in one way or another. But there... It's not very intimidating. I would be more intimidated if they asked me to do my own hip-hop album, but I feel pretty confident.
I love the idea of somebody, some record producer going, "Look, Eminem's busy. Jake, I know this is unorthodox, but could you?"
I'd spend 5 months training to be...
would you gain weight, lose weight? Something has to happen. And he did this, I know everyone's mentioned this.
Yes.
Yeah. Right after Nightcrawler, so you had to gain... X number of pounds for this.
Mm-hmm.
What lies have you been telling people about your regime? Like you ate 2 buffaloes a day, body weight and mozzarella, and then you just worked out for a bit.
Grass-fed buffaloes.
Yeah.
And then ate the cheese that they had already made, buffalo mozzarella.
Yep.
I had another movie in between. I did another movie in between these two movies, actually. I did this movie, Everest, about Mount Everest. So we shot a lot of that movie in Italy, mm-hmm. and I ate a lot of pasta after Nightcrawler. And then I got into even better shape, training, you know, learning how to box for southpaw. So it's a logical progression that doesn't look as logical, you know, on screen.
Which film injured you the most of Nightcrawler, then Everest, then Southpaw? Because I think I know the answer.
He's sick. He's sick-minded. What injured me the most?
Yeah.
Well, Nightcrawler sent me to the hospital, so I would have to say Nightcrawler.
Which is not really the film you'd guess would be the one, you know, about a ambulance-chasing pseudo-journalist.
I know. I would expect an ambulance to be close by, but it wasn't. you wouldn't necessarily think that, but that movie. But, you know, I got hit a lot when I was making this movie, but nothing to send me to the hospital, thankfully.
And you did, I gather, and this kind of blew my mind, 2 weeks' worth of fights. So you had to do all of the fights essentially on the trot.
Yes.
And as you're doing the fights, you've got to have the right makeup for just how beat up you are, right?
Right.
So is it like, okay, so where am I here? So how beat up am I? More blood on the eye, please.
We went in stages, you know. So we actually went in reverse. We shot the last fight first.
Wow, that's intense.
Because it's sort of the biggest fight and the longest fight.
Mm.
So Antoine really wanted to shoot that part first. And, you know, in order we would go, we do round 1, 2, 4, 6 the first day. You know, we wouldn't do every single round.
Sure.
We would pick rounds. And then we choreographed those rounds. And then we'd do that for like a day. We do all that. And he would roll the camera for 15 minutes or so. So we would do all the dialogue in between rounds. A bell would ring. We'd do our choreography. And then we would improv too. We'd improv fighting and we'd talk between our gloves. Like while we were moving around, I'd say, okay, I'm going to throw 2 jabs, right hand and then left hook. And I'll try for an uppercut, you know. And then, okay, all right, wait, give me 3. I'd be like, no, don't give me 4 punch combinations. Give me 3 punch combinations. I'd be like, okay, double jab, right hand, and then can I come back for a jab? Yeah, okay, all right. And then I'm going to block 2, and then I'm going to get hit by the right hand. Okay, all right, let's go. And then it'd be like, boom, 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 you know? And then, okay, let's do that again. Boom, boom, boom. Now the reverse, right? And we talk.
You missed a trick, because what you should have done is recorded that, and there's your rap song.
With no rhymes, yeah?
With no rhymes. Absolutely
no
rhyme none.
Whatsoever.
And the beat is punches.
I should stick to your ideas more often.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. The film has you with Forest Whitaker. We had him in the podcast booth quite recently, and I found myself in awe of him, as I suppose many people are.
Yes.
Was there a lot of that for you, or did it kind of go quite quickly?
He has a real air about him that I think is like somewhat intimidating and a little bit uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, like on film, it's so profound, you know, translates in such an amazing way on film. And he has so much experience, and there's this kindness to him. There's this deep, deep kindness to Forrest. And yeah, it was really, really wonderful working with him. I was intimidated initially, and I think intimidated all along, but I also was playing a character that you had to push him and frustrate him too.
Mm.
So in that way, I really had to keep my wits about me and, you know, frustrate him.
Is that the trick? Just make him feel a little bit annoyed.
Well, you know, we did a lot of improv in this movie. And
is that so?
Yeah, the movie is, many scenes of this movie are improv.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Forrest walked into this world and he is a really formidable opponent in terms of just working on improv. And his ideas that he threw back to me were always very complicated. And the interesting thing about him was it was always challenging me and my person, which is exactly what Tick does.
Yes, you know, his character's name, Tick, yeah.
Tick is his character. It's exactly what his character does. So he, you know, it was very interesting, you know, as we were improvising, you know, he would throw me back a curveball that, you know, many of the actors, as amazing as they were at the improv, you know, weren't doing. So as soon as he came on, you know, I realized, oh, wow, this guy really, really knows what he's doing. He's not just a great actor, he's also really incredible in improvisation.
Now, your character in this film is a man of fewer words than, say, Lou Bloom here.
Mm.
And with Lou Bloom, you learned the whole script in Nightcrawler. You learned all.
Yeah.
How much of that script do you still remember?
A lot of it.
Does it just circle around your head every so often?
Yeah, it's still there.
Does the Smurf speech from Donnie Darko, does that in your head ever?
Sad to say that was like close to 12 years ago, which is maybe more, 15 years ago?
Don't
no,
say
wait,
that.
20 years ago?
You're not allowed to say that.
Holy shit. Am I 60?
I think you might be dead, Jake.
Whoa.
This is really surreal.
I mean, no. I feel alive here. Can't be.
Nah.
No.
No, you're talking to me.
Yeah,
you're alive.
I can't. I'm alive. I'm really alive.
You.
No, yeah, I remember lines, but not like, I mean, I really remember a lot of Nightcrawler. Why do you want me to say one?
No, I'm not that guy. I was interviewing Seth MacFarlane recently, and someone said to me explicitly, please don't just ask him to do the voice, because that's just not cool.
But that's a voice, I mean.
I mean, this is...
I wasn't going to do the character, I would just do the lines for you.
I mean, the one that everyone that's seen the film, for me, that kind of finds themselves saying is, my motto is, if you want to win the lottery...
You have to make the money to buy it.
Has that been something people say to you in the street? Because there's a part of me that really wishes that they do.
Someone said to me as I was leaving a press junket, one of the cameramen said, oh, excuse me. And I was like, yeah, he said... Just remember, I would never ask you to do anything I wouldn't do myself. And I was like, okay, bye.
See ya.
I was like, but those lines are just, they're just, I mean, they're the best to say. I mean, he wrote such a brilliant screenplay.
And that little viral video you did, the trailer, I haven't seen anything like it. Last year, I wrote a lot about Nightcrawler, and that in particular I loved, because wasn't that not in part your idea to deliver that speech over several locations?
Yes.
And then kind of push it together in this kind of hypnotic teaser.
Well, as every kind of great thing, you know, as it all happens and is invented, it's a collaboration of a lot of different people's minds. But yeah, I wanted to do every speech into the camera, and every time we were setting up a shot and we were taking time, I just figured it could be used for something.
Ah, okay.
And so we did that. Much of this may of many people we were shooting. And then, you know, we sold the movie with that, which was kind of cool. And then John Gilroy, who's the editor of Nightcrawler, who's actually Dan Gilroy's brother, the writer and director of the movie, they put it together for a teaser trailer. And it was really brilliant.
Of your back catalogue, what are the ones that you find yourself thinking of? Is Zodiac often there? What are the things you're most proud of, would you say?
I'm really proud of Zodiac, yeah. I mean, I'm really proud of Brokeback Mountain. I'm really proud of Donnie Darko, and I really love End of Watch and everything that I learned from that movie. I love Enemy, this movie I did. And
you've not seen enough Enemy.
Oh, yeah?
I felt like not enough people are aware of it.
Well, it's a very small film and, you know, obscure in a lot of ways, but that and... I'm very proud of Nightcrawler, and I really love Southpaw, too. So there are a number of them there that you look back on those things, and you kind of, they mark times in your life, but they also mark choices. You know, they mark your belief in something and your belief in, you know, your instinct and stuff. And that's what I look at. I'm like, ah, yeah, you knew that was going to be kind of cool. Oh, way to go, dude. I'm proud of that.
And you had a decision to make with Nightcrawler, whether you either did A Prince and Into the Woods, where we would have hopefully had some of your rapping skills. Because
That would have happened, absolutely.
100%. I mean, it wouldn't have been in the script, but you would have made that happen.
I would have done that. I don't know if I would have kept the job.
Ah.
But that's sort of how I would probably have approached that.
That is a note your agent gives people. Yeah, Jake, he's up for the part, but he may rap.
Yeah.
At any moment.
You'd be surprised, but yeah.
The thing is about Into the Woods is that Meryl Streep genuinely does rap, so...
She does.
So it's the weirdest thing.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, the opening sequence is her bursting into this kitchen and firing a rap at Emily Blunt and James Corden.
I love that.
Full on. Yeah, crazy. So you decided not to do that, and in retrospect, would you have done 5 months' worth of spitting lyrics for that one? Because that's a decision. That's a fork in the road there.
Yeah, I mean, no, I was always... devoted and committed to do Nightcrawler. I always thought it was brilliant. I always felt like there was no other choice. I mean, I was producing the movie too, so.
Of course, yeah.
You know, there was no real like this or that. It was just really a question of whether or not we could figure them both out.
Yeah, fit them in, yeah. Going back to Southpaw, Antoine Fuqua, he is a humongous boxing fan. Was he like giving you constant notes, and was he very like into it? Because having spoken to him about the film, he is so proud of this movie and so proud of what he's done with the boxing. Was he very intense as a director?
He is a very intense director, but I'm also intense in what I do, and I think we were total partners. Yeah, I mean, I knew I worked so hard to try and make sure that everything that I was doing looked and could be shot as authentic, you know, and so he was very particular. But at the same time, by the time we were shooting, we had gotten past all of those things because we had spent days upon days upon days and hours upon hours already discussing all that.
Sure.
And the choreography situation in the movie and us, you know, trying to tell the story of that, that was like a lot of work and many, many hours figuring that out. So, yeah, I mean, he was with me the entire time. I mean, even he came and trained with me, you know, every day.
And tell me, did you keep the world champion belt for your character? Tell me you kept that.
No.
Oh, man.
I'm not allowed to have that.
That's not on.
I'm an actor.
You're not allowed to have things.
You don't get a WBC championship light heavyweight belt. You're crazy.
Not even a fake one?
They don't give that away. Come on. And we got the real ones.
You're kidding. Really?
No, we got real ones. Yeah, we had real ones in the movie. Very heavy. You know, really soft underneath, like sheepskin. Mm-hmm. Really kind of amazing. Like as if you would wear it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
It's like your cummerbund. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You just wear it like with your... with your every outfit.
To pajamas. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and also to talk about Nightcrawler. We're humongous fans, and thank you again, Jake.
Thank you, man. Thanks for letting me eat my sandwich here.
It's my pleasure.
You thought that was the end of the interview? It is not quite. Well, it is. That was the end of the interview. It's still me, Ali Plum, editor of this podcast. I'm about to set up myself again. Second time in 2 weeks that I'm setting up for my own science bit. But here comes the Squarespace science bit for this episode in 3, 2, 8, 4, 1, go. Yes, it's science bit time with your friendly local regular editor, Ali Plum. Squarespace, of course, is the fun and easy way of creating your own personal website, portfolio, or online store. And guess what? You get a 10% off code with Empire. The word to put into the coupon box is Empire. Empire. E-M-P-I-R-E. It looks professionally designed, no matter what your skill level. There's no coding required. Easy-to-use tools throughout. It's got state-of-the-art technology powering it to make sure it's secure and stable and not going to, like, fall over in the middle of the night. It's trusted by millions of people and some of the most respected brands in the world, and it starts at just $8 a month. You can work it out. I think about £5 is about right a month, and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year. So start your free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com. When you do decide to sign up for Squarespace, remember Empire is the offer code, 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace, as they say, build it beautiful. Thank you for listening not only to this science bit, but to the podcast generally. Please enjoy the rest of your regularly scheduled program.
Okay, that was Jakey G with Ali P. We're going to discuss Southpaw on next week's show, but for now, let's tackle this week's releases, and the biggest slash smallest of them all is Marvel's Ant-Man, the MCU movie with the, I think it's fair to say, the most troubled production history to date. Edgar Wright was obviously the director on the movie. Then he left just a few weeks before filming began, and he was replaced by Peyton Reed. The actors, by and large, stayed on. And now, just over a year later, here we are with Ant-Man about to drop. What did we make of the finished product then?
We liked this one a lot. This one stars Paul Rudd as Scott Lang, a reformed cat burglar just got out of prison, trying to turn his life around when he is yanked into the world of superheroes by Michael Douglas's Hank Pym, the former Ant-Man, who's developed a special Pym particle which explores the space between atoms, I think I'm right in saying, which enables him to shrink down to the size of an ant. And thanks to a handy bit of other technology, to control and talk to ants as well. So one of the more unusual and, you know, on paper slightly underwhelming abilities when it comes down to superheroes. You know, you've got gods of thunder, you've got people wielding sort of the powers of the heavens, and then you've got a man who can talk to ants and become very small. But thanks to the powers of physics, when he's very, very small, he can hit proportionally with the sort of power of a bullet. So when he shrinks down very small, he can do some serious damage. And there's loads of fun to be had with, actually, the shrinking stuff. And it's hard to say how much of Joe and Edgar's script remains in the final film, but you feel that... Yes, Joe Cornish, co-writer Joe Cornish. You feel their influence throughout, and it's an interesting tonal film. There's loads of comedy in it. And I don't want to talk about the kind of climactic sequence, even though it's kind of given away a little bit in the trailer, but incredibly fun, you know, incredibly sweet, just really, really well put together. And I know we've talked about this on the podcast quite a lot, but I do feel a lot of the Marvel films have a sort of a similar sort of third act problem, which this film, I think, manages to sidestep entirely. By going sort of smaller rather than larger scale in every sense.
Well, I think a lot of geeks might be going into this movie with an appreciation of Edgar Wright's films and maybe a sense of regret for what will never be. Mm. You have to set that aside. what Edgar and Joe and Edgar as a director would have done, we'll never know, we will never see. You have to set it aside and watch the film that the Marvel have managed to make. And it is a lot of fun. It has its flaws. But I think one of the interesting things, and we're going to get into this, we're going to do a spoiler special, it should be out early next week. One of the things I really, really like about this film is that it is tonally and in terms of scale, funnily enough, and structure, the closest to the original Iron Man than any of their films. Bar the presence of the fact that there's two leads in this, two male leads, you got your Hank Pym and your Scott Lang. Bar that, if it was just one lead, then you could almost lay Iron Man over this. There's a bad guy who's a megalomaniac CEO who wants to take the technology that the hero has and use it against him and create a weapon, and there's a feisty, you know, romance, and there's not a lot of action in the first hour or so. I don't think Scott Lang even dons the Ant-Man suit for about 40 minutes or so. But it is a lot of fun, and it is very funny, and it does have a lot of stylistic quirks, but it doesn't feel like Peyton Reed's doing an Edgar Wright impression, which I thought was going to be the case. I think Edgar would have made a more kinetic film, but we'll never know. What we have here, though, is a film that's co-written, ultimately co-written. There's a credit to Edgar and Joe, so a lot of their screenplay, I assume, remains. But there's also Paul Rudd and Adam McKay, who obviously is a Anchorman director. They also get a screenwriting credit as well, and that's really interesting. And Rudd writes a really fun and engaging Scott Lang. Hank Pym is Michael Douglas as Hank Pym is very, very solid. I've seen this twice now. I saw then the second time with a big audience. All the jokes were hitting big, and I started to think, oh, actually, this could hit on a Guardians level. It's got that sort of vibe. It's got that sort of attitude. It's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I never thought it was going to be bad, but you could have been forgiven for thinking it was going to be very, very messy. It is not that. But there you go.
There's a lot of invention in the film. I mean, I shared your concerns going in, but you know, the time when there's a moment where Lang shrinks down for the first size and he falls through a plug hole through floorboards and he ends up, you know, falling into a nightclub and ends up in between the grooves on a record. I mean, it's brilliant to look at, and it's geniusly put together. You know, there's a fight inside a briefcase, and then there's, of course, as I said, the final act, which we won't spoil. But a lot of thought's gone into this, and they've really sort of enhanced the feeling of being small, and they put you in the Ant-Man's head, as it were. And there's loads of fun with the ants as well. There's some really great visual gags in there, which they put together. I mean, if I were to complain about anything, it might be, while I love Corey Stoll, his Yellowjacket isn't the most developed villain, which is, I think, a problem that Marvel stumble into a lot.
Yeah. There are some clumsy, very clumsy connections to the Marvel universe at large. One of them is great. You mentioned there's a cameo from an Avenger, which actually plays a lot better than it could have done. It feels like a comic book. There's a little bit of connected dots stuff going on that's a little clumsy, but at the same time, it opens up some interesting avenues for the MCU to explore. It's very charming and a lot of fun, and I liked it more than I thought I was going to.
And PSU, there are or PSA, I should say. PSU is a PlayStation. PSA, there are in fact two stings, as we've come to expect. Do stay for them both, because they're kind of important.
Yes, one of them's very important, in fact. So do hang around for that one. Okay, 4 stars then for Ant-Man. It is the film of the week. Also out this week, we have True Story, which is a true story based on a true story, starring Jonah Hill and James Franco.
Correct.
Phil Catt.
Yeah. Well, it's this part, I mean, Jonah Hill's sort of, I don't know, reinvention, expansion of the Hilliverse. He's from you know, straight comedy to more dramatic roles. That's taken in Moneyball and obviously The Wolf of Wall Street, and it's brought him full circle in the sense that it's reuniting him with one of his old comedy muckers in James Franco. Jonah Hill plays a disgraced New York Times journalist who has done some bad, unethical things on a cover story and been fired. And then he hears, sort of out of the blue, from a man called Christian Longo. Now, this is a true story. And Christian Longo was a man who murdered his whole family. He was incarcerated. But he'd been using Michael Finkel, Jonah Hill's character's name, as an alias. And suddenly, he gets in touch. The two of them are connected. And Longo offers Finkel the opportunity to have exclusive access to his story in return for some, you know, some favors. help with writing and other things. But obviously there's a lot more to it than that. The two of them and their dynamic is what's at the heart of this film, and the ideas of sort of manipulation and moral corrosion, I suppose. And Jonah Hill's character trying to kind of get back on the up and up, but he's a man who's not afraid to cut corners. And he's not necessarily a sympathetic character. Mm. And, you know, it's a real story. It's a very interesting and, in many ways, unusual tale. Little sort of shades of In Cold Blood in the relationship between the criminal and the writer. Mm-hmm. And who has the power? You know, who in this situation is in control? We gave it 4 stars, and it's definitely worth a look. It's a very different sort of film, obviously, to Ant-Man. But it's a film that we recommend.
4 stars then for True Story, and here's another True Story. That's it for this week's Emperor podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun, when we'll be joined by Pete Docter and Jonas Rivera, director and producer of Pixar's latest slice of brilliance, Inside Out. I won't be here for that, because I'm going on an actual honest-to-goodness holiday. I know.
Hooray!
I know. Hooray! He's gone!
I mean,
finally,
not hooray,
the tyranny
in that sense.
Is over. No, it's going to be good. So you'll be in capable hands. Phil will be hosting, or Helen will be hosting, or I don't know, maybe we'll get someone the size of an ant to host. Who knows? That could be fun. But anyway, until then, it is goodbye from Phil.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from James.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me. I'm off to get some shorts, because I'm going to show off my pasty white Irish legs in the Big Apple. Concrete jungle where dreams are made of. See you next time. Bye.
Hello, Ali again. Yes, I keep butting in. Right, you thought it was over. It's not quite. Don't forget, it is 10% off. You could get 10% off your new website on squarespace.com with the offer code EMPIRE, which spells empire. 10% off. Squarespace. Great new site. You make it. Really easy. Looks good. God, I'm getting excited. It's been a long day. Enjoy the rest of your week, because, of course, you'll be back next week for the next podcast. See you then.